Computer. Hi, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of The Crush Pad. I'm John McCarroll. As always, I'm joined by Alicia Kennedy, author of No Meat Required, which is such a fucking good book. And I guess if you turn this off right now, just get that fucking book. Thank you. Hi, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Do you agree it's a good book?
I could have written a better book with more money. I'll tell you that.
Hell yeah. Yes. So book number two is going to come soon, and more money, better book, right?
Please, yes. Okay. That's cool. The equation.
I guess ask a stupid question, get a very good answer. Hey, how's the state of publishing right now? Is it fun to write a book?
Is that a rhetorical question?
Yeah, they're all rhetorical. You don't have to answer anything.
No, the state of publishing is pretty weird, especially when you write about food and you write like narrative nonfiction about food and you're not writing a cookbook. Like I've still, as of like last week, and the book has been out for almost 2 months, have been telling people it's not a cookbook.
Did people expect it to be like a coffee table book?
Yes. I saw there was one comment on TikTok where it was like, oh, now that I see how small it is, I'll pre-order it. And I was like, how big did you expect it to be?
as someone who's trying to sell some wine books, it turns out everyone expects it to be coffee table and suitable for gifting and not like a book one might want to read.
No. It's a really interesting and complicated thing to write about food or wine and like try and make it complicated. People have it's really antagonizing to people that any of this is complicated.
I think that's maybe where we should probably just start. Your book is really, and I mean this in the nicest possible way, really fucking complicated. And it is, I don't know, none of the other people I've interviewed are reading or listening to this. It's the best thing I've read this year about food. It may be the best thing. I don't read much, so don't get twisted.
My head was getting so huge. Yeah.
Not as good as Elden Ring, but it's pretty good. And so I guess my big question is, and this is probably a big question, where did you get the confidence to write an unabashedly political book about food, because everything else is bad? And that's me saying it, not you. And yours is good. So we'll start there.
Well, I think there's lots of good books about food and politics.
I'm thinking of Foodheim specifically. Really great book. I'm saying that, not you again.
I mean, you know, my approach to how I write about food, it's funny that people find it, I don't know, complicated or you know, different from other people's, because I feel like I've just, you know, like any writer, have just collected an amalgamation of influences over the years. And the interesting thing for me about writing and about writing about food is that I had wanted to be like a literary writer. I'd wanted to write like real books. I still have that aspiration, of course, that one day it'll turn around and I won't be writing about food. But like, because I even do the thing of minimizing what it means to write about food, because writing about food is so material and necessary. And, you know, and so writing about it has to by nature be political, because it employs so many people.
Absolutely should be, but nobody, like everyone else, seems to be bending over backwards to not ever talk about politics and food unless it's like really bullshit, like, oh, you know, this is my culture, and then just throwing around. But like, no one actually talks about the material realities of food, which is your book is not complicated in the slightest. It's completely logical, makes perfect sense, but the complicated thing is, if you read it and you understand it, then it requests the reader to do something, which is really cool.
Well, I'm only requesting people change their thinking. I think there's a lot of people who think that they're good. And also maybe not eat so much meat. But also, and think about a whole host of things. Sure. I think people shy away from this stuff because it does ask of the reader things. And we're trained, especially in lifestyle journalism. And this is kind of like my shtick right now, is talking about the ways in which lifestyle journalism has responsibilities to a greater purpose than simply actually telling people what to buy or, you know, making people feel good. Like, I just, mm-hmm. I don't think we have to walk around feeling bad all the time, but I think we have to find the joy in making things a little bit more complicated. And we have to find, you know, I always kind of talk about it in terms of fast fashion. I think fast fashion is more easy for people to understand because they have less of a fraught relationship with clothing. That, I mean, some people, but like, I think when it comes down to it, more people have a really complicated relationship with food than they do with fashion. Mm-hmm. And it's, so when you talk about it, like, why are you consuming at this level that requires so many people to be miserable and live mm-hmm. on a pittance and destroys the planet? Then it makes a little bit more sense, but people still have a really bad reaction to that. And they say, like, no, but it's for people without a lot of money and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And it's like, never mind the fact that most of us in the US have more clothes than we could ever really have put mm-hmm. on ever. And so, and in a reasonable way. And like, it's a similar thing with food.
You're
where
calling
it's
out
like,
the zoomers right there. Like, stop layering.
They consume so much clothing. And like, my sister, who's 23, like, she is like insane. She needs a new outfit for everything. Anyway, I can't take it. But like,
kids
food is
days.
Similar. And no, in that, like, people think of it as something, it is something you need 100%. Mm-hmm. There is no getting around it.
Cosine.
But at the same time, but people don't want to think about how they don't want to complicate that relationship because it's one of, you know, complicated relationships with food can be around scarcity. They can be around depression and sort of executive function problems mm-hmm. and not wanting to cook. It can be around just exhaustion in general. The issues can be, and so the things that make it easy to feed yourself under conditions of, you know, economic scarcity or emotional or, you know, physical energy scarcity, it those things that make it easy to deal with those things are bad for the planet. And like,
yes.
and so like asking people to change their relationship to those things when requires that we also talk about the political and economic conditions that create the scarcity of mm-hmm. energy and of money. But at the same time, I think a lot of food movement texts from like the 2000s were like, poverty exists, mm-hmm. sorry. And then like kind of moved on from like
Jonathan Safran Foer book about
eating animals.
Yeah.
Eating animals.
I like that book. It's cute.
He was good at it. He was mm-hmm. good at approaching the subject for sure. And like, I think that, you know, any way people get their brains mm-hmm. in the door in thinking about food is a good way. But like the idea of like, you know, poverty exists, so we're only going to talk about people who can make choices around food and what mm-hmm. that can look like. And so that's the farmer's market and mm-hmm. the, you know, the ethical butcher and that sort of mm-hmm. thing. And that's great. But at the same time, for me, it doesn't go, we have to get to a place where we can talk about how political economic conditions create poverty, which mm-hmm. is kind of like a false need, obviously. It's a need of capitalism. Mm-hmm. And so like, what do we say about that? What do we do about that? How do we change things so that there is accessibility to quote unquote good food for everybody? And that's absolutely 100% possible. And like, so in my book, I talk a lot about, you know, the subsidies that go to meat and dairy, mm-hmm. industrial meat and dairy. And whenever people like radio interviewers are often like, well, you know, how do we bring fresh food to people if they don't have any money and they don't? And it's like, well, we change the conditions that cause them not to have any money. And like, I'm not an economist and I'm not a politician. So like, it's not my responsibility to like really figure that out.
No, fair.
Writer.
Yeah.
But like, at the same time, I'm like, it seems that we have a lot of money mm-hmm. that we're putting into the food system, but we're just doing a very bad thing with it. Why don't we take that money, which is doing a bad thing, and do good things with it? Like, is that like so freaking insane?
It sounds like such a duh, but like literally, like duh, like the money that Tyson gets,
yes.
it could do good things. And it turns out you don't need to eat chicken. It's like, it's not like, it's bad for the chickens and it's bad for you.
Yes. No, and I don't talk about animal rights, so I get vegans upset. But at the same time, it's like,
well, they have to be upset about something. And your oyster, the massacres you're doing on shellfish, like,
I know,
should really bring you to task on that one. And that's why I'm here today, America's preeminent vegan wine critic. Could you imagine?
What a fucking piece of shit. That would be really interesting.
Is gorgeous.
And if you liked that scintillating tidbit, you'll love the Crush Pad, which is the Disgorgeous Patreon feed full of cool interviews, hot news, and the kind of industry gossip that you would love to have. And you can get in for only $5 a month. Go to patreon.com/disgorgeous and join the community of the most swinging wine singles in the world. All right, see you in the hot tub.